Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Houlihan. Into the penalty area.
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Listen to that. In a week where Liverpool finally get their hands on the trophy after all that waiting and Ken not here, I thought it was only right that we give Liverpool fans their moment and our listeners their moment to gloat. A wonderful moment during the week on Wednesday. Ken will be reeling over in the UK at the thought of us honouring those Liverpool fans. But it was another week that passed in sport and things are slowly starting to open up again. And for other teams, the Premier League, they're gearing up for tomorrow's final day of the season. For some, like Chelsea, Man United, Leicester, they'll have to battle it out to try and finish in the Champions League places. But meanwhile, Bournemouth, Watford and Aston Villa will have to attempt to avoid joining Norwich in being relegated to the Championship. The date of the first Championship match, of course, has already been confirmed as the 12th of September. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on with Alan Cawley as he joins us to talk about football and the final weekend. In athletics, Ciara McGeoin became the second woman in 26 years to set an Irish record in the 800 metres last night. Congratulations to her. And Declan Drake joins me in studio looking back at the first weekend of the Dublin Hurling Club Championships and turning our focus onto the Football Club Championships this week. We'll be catching up with Ken, who managed to get a victory last night. It was a little bit patchy at times, but I watched it on Eurosport, but he got victory in the World Championships over Patrick, and we'll be talking to him a little bit later on that win and how the championship is facing up. And in racing, we've got Dean Ryan from the Racing Hour podcast joining us for the big preview of the Galway Racing Festival next week. You'll also have a lucky 15. And don't forget, we'll also have our major moment in sport and we'll look back to some that we'll remember fondly and others with absolute disgust, including our producer Paul Morris, as Sergio Aguero's last-minute goal to clinch City their first title in 50 years from the 2011-2012 season is our magic moment in sport. As usual, you can get in touch on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook at Dublin's Talking Sport and Twitter at Sport1068. Let's have another listen to that. Oh my God, Declan, did you ever think that you'd hear the likes of that aloud on this station? Ken will be kicking himself.
Thinking to myself, it's easy now, he's not here. You have the magic moment with Aguero, and then you have that as well. What a surreal moment that was during the week as well. An empty Anfield, and Kenny Dalglish presenting the Premier League trophy to Jordan Henderson. 30 years waiting. It's a long, long time for a club of that stature, and I don't think they'll be waiting as long again.
No, definitely not. And they did it in style. There was a few hairy moments. I watched it. My son, of course, being a Liverpool fan, was delighted to watch it and see it. It looked a little bit hairy there when it got to 4-3, that they weren't going to go and do it in style and everything else. But actually, there was some great goals in the game. I enjoyed watching it. I still can't get my head around the anti-stadium stuff, but that's another story entirely. But they did it in the end, and there was some good football in it, some good goals. And I think it was fitting that they got the trophy on the back of a win.
I thought
like that.
The sideline spat between Frank Lampard and the Liverpool bench was interesting as well. Obviously, Frank is chasing. He had more at stake.
Yes, the pressure probably.
Champions League.
Yeah.
But that was an interesting one. And of course, he has a cup final to look forward to next week as well with Arsenal.
Absolutely.
Which no doubt you'll be watching.
Well, I was. And I have to say, last week I was pleasantly surprised. You know, they were 8-1, lads. 8-1 to win that match, Arsenal. 8-1. I couldn't believe it when I saw that. price pre-match in a two-horse race. So that'll give you some idea of how little the bookies thought about Arsenal's chances of winning that one. Now, we got to be straight about it. Like, there was enough chances blown. It should probably have been a tougher win than it was. But, I mean, against the run of play, you know, it was a good victory. We'll take it. And another final. And then you go out during the week and fall apart. But anyway, no, we won't talk about that.
But is Arteta the man long term, do you think, for the job, Reg?
It's, again, hard to tell. Certainly, there's, you can see there's noted improvement there. But I still think we're lacking a few key players. I don't know where they're going to come from. But I think there's still just, you know, we're kind of relying on individuals too much. It still doesn't look like a team. So I don't know if he can make them play more as a team, then possibly. But there's just too much inconsistency for me. Are you all right over there, Paul? You're not suffering too much after having to listen to that Liverpool anthem, though.
I must have missed that production meeting this morning.
Quite clearly.
You were overruled.
You'll never walk alone in the background. Aguero's goal, as Declan said. And else you want to rub in while I'm here, Ken. I'm fighting your corner here, man. Yeah, we had to sit and suffer this. Wednesday couldn't have been any worse. Leeds lifting a trophy as well. As United fans are there, yeah. But listen, now, fair play to Liverpool.
Well, I was delighted for the
Leeds.
I've
said it. Somebody bet me I wouldn't say it. There you go. I've said it. Fair play to Liverpool. Well done.
Well, I was delighted about the Leeds thing. I really was. I thought that was good. I think that's a team that we should see in the Premier League. So after 16 years, I think it's great that they're back. We discussed it last week.
Yeah.
So I have no gripe over that whatsoever.
I think the thing about that generally is that if you look at the Leeds situation 12 months ago, where they disappointed, where they lost a couple of regular games, and then they went and they lost the playoff to Derby. Other chairmen, other owners might have looked at it at the time and said, maybe he's not the man for the job and we'll change it, as happens so often. But the Leeds owners, the Leeds board, stuck with Bielsa. They have their reward. They're back in the Premier League now, and good luck to them.
Yeah, it's a huge, huge plus for them. It really is. I said this last week as well. I just couldn't believe it was 16 years since they were in it. You know, it just seems like to have gone so quickly at that period of time.
I think 16 years and 15 managers.
The interesting thing about link between the two clubs winning their respective championships, winning their respective championships this season, both of them got the same trophy the last time.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go, the old mix.
The real tall one.
Yeah.
Championship trophy, yeah.
But listen, there's an awful lot going on at the other end as well, lads. Bournemouth, Watford, Villa, and three tough matches for them. It's hard to see who's going to make it through in that thing. I mean, I know that you wouldn't be too sorry to see Watford but...
No, I wouldn't, for the reason, their treatment of Nigel Pearson recently was an absolute disgrace. Mind you, a £1 million bonus if they stay up. It's a nice reward for them, but no, I wouldn't have been too happy with that. Bournemouth are precarious, I think. Their season really turned in that dramatic game against Leicester, wasn't it, a couple of weeks ago? And they thought that might have been the catalyst
the kick on,
to stay up. But they are where they are. Aston Villa are where they are. I don't honestly know what's going to happen tomorrow, lads. I can't say. What are your own thoughts on it?
You got to look at maybe who they're playing and what's at stake for the opposition as well. As you said, you mentioned about Leicester and United, Rich. You're looking at Watford going to Arsenal, needing at least a draw to avoid relegation. But Arsenal, has to be said, all focus on next
exactly
race. So
the
for
final.
Them, maybe resting players that you don't know. Then Villa, that's in kind of their own hands against West Ham. West Ham, safe. You know, safe, sitting pretty. You probably maybe fancy Villa on that one myself. Again, you kind of have to really look at who they're playing against and stuff like that. So that's why this, you know, last day of the season, we're going to go into
with Everton. You know, that's going to be a very tough one.
It is tough. Everton have come with one or two decent and okay results. They should be much higher on the table than they are, but with the players they had. I think that probably would be look on paper.
You have to
that's
think
the toughest,
of the three of them, that's probably
the toughest
one. Because
I like Eddie Howe. I hope that Bournemouth can stay up.
Well, the Villa fans will be and Watford fans will look to get their thoughts on who you think could come and go.
Fans?
I do. I know one Watford fan. Would you believe? I know a good few Villa fans though. So I think I'll go.
Well,
with
I was going to say Villa would have a good following here. So, I suppose they're probably the most iconic of the three clubs, maybe that are
bigger,
battling
bigger in stature and bigger history and everything else. For like Leeds coming up, we said it for years. You know, missing that kind of big club and stuff like that. But yeah, as I said, probably Villa. I'd like to see stay.
You don't want to go down to the Championship again, as Leeds have proven. It's so difficult to get out of it. And you look at a team like Nottingham Forest. I don't know when they were in the Premier League last, but they blew it during the week.
Yeah.
To try and get playoffs, they have another season ahead of them in the Championship, and it's a very, very tough league to get out of. Absolutely.
Wednesday night was absolutely unbelievable for football. Like, I mean, I know Liverpool fans probably obviously glued to their team obviously lifting the league and stuff, but if they threw an eye across to the Championship and teams trying to get out, that Notts Forest Swansea had to win by 3 clear goals and had to lose by 3 clear goals, and 2-4-1 results respectively. So it sees Swansea creep into 6th, and the potential of a Swansea Cardiff playoff game there on the cards. And then, as I said, the other end, yeah, Charlton going down, Wigan, Hull on that one. And
Wigan's
obviously the point deduction, yeah.
But I think there might be a legal challenge to that,
because of the 12-13 point deduction, all right, on that one. But West Brom again doing a baggies, boing, up and down, and they're back.
And if any club is looking for a manager, Paul Cook at Wigan has got to be a candidate for a top Championship job, at least, because the success that he's enjoyed with Wigan has been absolutely fantastic, and he's a top bloke as well.
Mm. Exactly, absolutely. But a load of action on Wednesday night. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
And of course, United looking to secure the Champions League, just avoiding defeat against Leicester should do it for them. That would be a great result, I suppose, considering for Ole and United fans, they'd have to take that Champions League. Things were so shaky and wobbly for a while there. No, I know they have to close the gap on Liverpool and City. Of course, that's the long-term goal. But Champions League, you're going to take it.
Well, absolutely. You're going to take it for financial reasons. It's all about the money, all about getting players in. But you're still 30-odd points behind Liverpool. That's not acceptable at all. Mm. Now, even City, I know Liverpool exceptional this year. But for United fans, delighted to get Champions League. Come on, bigger than that.
In fairness to Solskjaer, he's done a remarkable job with the club. I know there was a period there where certain United fans were saying, no, Ole is not the man, we need somebody else, more experienced, whatever the case might be. But in fairness to him, he's turned it around well. He's got them into the position to be within potentially 90 minutes of the Champions League. And when you consider when he came into the job, whenever it was, that if you had told him that with going into the last day of the season, he Champions League football would be within his own control, he would gladly have taken it. Well, so I think fair play to him for the job he's done there.
Yeah,
but I take your point. 30 points behind Liverpool is completely unacceptable. Yeah. But that's a gap that's not going to be bridged this year or next year.
No. 2, 3, 4 signings and the rest. The last 3 games, looking at them, just Bruno Fernandes has been amazing and everything going forward is amazing. But when the cracks start to show and the backs are to the wall, you're looking at your centre-half and your goalkeeper pulling off some howlers, and it's not acceptable, really. The FA Cup semi-final was, silly error, fair enough, but 2 defensive errors.
Yeah.
That's Maguire being off the pace, if you ask
me.
And then you look at the last 2 games, they could have had this wrapped up with a bit of security going into Sunday.
Mm.
But now it's Leicester away, and Leicester have the potential of a win against United and puts United into 5th, but then you have to look at Chelsea's game as well with Wolves. That's not going to be handy either for them. So, and again, focusing on next weekend too for Chelsea. So, what do you do? It's going to be fantastic. It really, really is. Yeah. But as you said, Solskjaer, decent job, Decky. But listen, 30-odd points behind Liverpool now.
Work to do.
Massive work to do.
Interesting as well, Declan, a bit closer to home, the announcement that there is going to be this season pass for the League of Ireland games. What do you make of that?
Welcome it, Reg, to be honest with you. I think it's priced very competitively as well.
Yeah, we're looking at 55, 60 euros.
I think, I'd certainly be signing up for it, all right.
And how is that? Is it going to be, where will it be broadcast through? Is it online streaming or what?
As far as I know, it is online. Yeah. It is online, through a partnership between the FAI and an RTE, who will be providing the technical expertise and commentators on that for it as well. It's innovative. We need it. Fans obviously can't go to the games. They want to keep in touch with what's happening. So I think it's a very innovative move. And I see that Declan McBennett, the head of sport in RTE, coming out during the week and saying, look, we've done this now.
Mm.
Make it work. If it doesn't work, it's not down to us. So it's down to the people now to go out and to support the venture, which I'm sure that they will in numbers, because the appetite just to get back watching live football out there is absolutely immense from a lot of people that I've met during the last few weeks.
I haven't got too much of the detail yet, Paul, but you're talking about 18 games for a fee of maybe €55, probably a game per week type of thing.
It's 55 games plus €55, big depending, with over 55 matches on the platform itself. €69 for abroad. It's ran through the same streaming service that the GAA use, GAA Go. So if you're abroad, you can sign up to that and stuff like that, and you get the games. But this is working out €55 for Irish people here, obviously. There's Premier Division fixtures in it. There's some extra FAA Cup matches as well. So, listen, the package is there. We can't go to the games. We got to, you know, they're literally putting it on a plate for us. You know, obviously there is a cost and stuff like that. That we know the finances. We don't want to go into that just now on domestic football and Irish football. Let's see. As Declan quite rightly said, you know, the appetite amongst the diehards will be there, definitely. So, you know, let's see if we can cough up and see if we can make this work.
Well, it's certainly, it sounds like a great plan. It sounds like a great scheme. It seems for true football fans, it would be something that they would be very interested in doing. And as you said, for people who are away, who might still want to be able to follow their teams, it's a good system.
Yeah, as I say, it's run through kind of the same, you know, RTE player and the GAA Go. So you're talking platform commentating, like Jerry Canning, Adrian Eames, you know, Des Curran, all like Hugh Cahill, John Kenny, Siobhan Madigan, like all top commentators. You know, they're everyone's being brought in. I see Alan and Stewie Bourne at the launch as well. So it'll be, you know, good, you know, after game analysis and stuff like that as well. We get Alan's thoughts too on it too as well after as well. But I'm looking at a decent package, and hopefully it does well. That's
because the league had started off very, very well in the first five or six games. We had full houses at Dalymount, full houses at Tolka Park, tremendous crowds out in Talla Stadium for Rovers as well. And obviously COVID hit, and we all know the effects of that. So hopefully now we can all bounce back. It's taking the coverage to a new level, and certainly wish everybody well that's involved in the venture.
Before we move on for football, I just want to mention the retiring of the number 22 jersey for the legend, Declan.
The legend. What's his name? Bellingham or something.
Bellingham.
Like that. Yeah.
17 years of age. Yeah. So much done. So quickly.
For those that mightn't be fully aware of it, he's a young lad of Birmingham City. He's not quite 17 just yet, but not too far off it. But he's got himself a move to the Bundesliga in Borussia.
And fair play to him.
Fair play to him.
Huge talent.
Yeah, absolutely. But Birmingham have taken the crazy decision to retire his shirt number, which was number 22. I mean,
if they keep doing this for every up and coming star, they won't have a jersey left.
I mean, as I said off air, and I was serious about it earlier on, in 5 years' time, he'll be back playing for Bristol Rovers in League Two. Hopefully, League Two. And in League One.
Speaking of anything, not careers, but retiring jerseys, that should be won at Man City tomorrow. Gone 308 games, 60 goals. Goals and 93 assists. The little magician, David Silva. Now there's a jersey.
You would retire
21, I think. 21, so I think you'd hang that up now if you're a City fan. What a fantastic player! It was brilliant to watch. You know those little pockets. Those
feels like he's been around forever.
Does absolutely, and thank God as a United fan he's gone. But no, listen, it'd be a bad loss to the Premier League. He is a smashing player, and always that little kind of magician, number 10 role you love seeing, and you love seeing played well, and no better man than Silva doing it. Was brilliant.
What do you make of it, Reg? Let's say Leinster decided to retire number 3 shirt or whatever it was.
I actually don't understand it. I think you're being kind of disrespectful to everybody that went before that ever wore that number jersey, that basically you're saying, you weren't up to much. We've gotten rid of your jersey. And I just don't get it. I mean,
it seems to be taken from a kind of an American sports, like they have large
that
numbers.
Says it all.
There
American.
You go, exactly. They have larger numbers, squad numbers, and specifics. But like that, a 1-11, as you quite rightly said, or 1-15, you couldn't.
But you just see all you can see. So okay, fair enough. The George Best situation we spoke off air about, Declan. I mean, you know, pick Cantona, pick any legends you want going across sport in any different things or whatever. I know it happens in other sports sometimes, but like, you know, the 23 jersey. For the Bulls, things like that. I just don't really understand the point of it. Because to me, then everybody starts to jump on a bandwagon. Every club thinks, oh, geez, we better start returning a few jerseys here. We haven't done any of that.
Yeah.
That means we're not respecting our players. We're not marking the occasion. And then everybody starts doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said to you, lads are ended up wearing jersey number 254 in 10 years' time.
Sometimes while listening to you guys on a Saturday morning at home,
sometimes
waiting on the call, I'd be watching the all reruns of matches on ITV.
Yeah.
And you see the captions coming up for the teams. 1 to 11.
It was simple.
And one substitute wearing number 12. How simplistic was it?
Simpler times.
Nothing wrong with it at all.
I just want to dredge, just before you go, I know you're going to jump to a break there soon, just going to one of the paper sections there. Liverpool fans will absolutely love this. A good bit of reading. 6-page special there from 2 to 7 in the Irish Independent this morning. It is a fantastic in-depth look. Liverpool's journey back to number 1. 203 players signed over 30 years. 1.6 billion spent. But it's great, great insight into each player they've signed over the years. The Irish connections there. You see McAteer, Stan, Robbie, Kennedy, Bab, Stalton there. You know, fantastic stuff. And then the international brigade of the this year's squad and stuff like that. So great piece of reading there if you get a good 2 minutes to yourself later on.
Excellent. And of course, the Irish link was there with Queevey and Kelleher as well.
The goalkeeper
this year,
We mentioned in the intro too, just on other sport, in athletics, a fantastic achievement, of course, by Ciara McGeehan, becoming just the second woman in 26 years to set an Irish record in the 1800 metres last night. She knocked out over a second of the Rose Anne Gallaghan previous best record. So fantastic form in Burns. So congratulations to her on that title last night. Fantastic work. And there's plenty going on as well in golf. I'm quite happy to see Paul Dunne, who's gone through a bit of a rough patch of it over the last while. You know, he's 3 under in the Masters. Jonathan Caldwell is doing exceptionally well. The banger golfer, of course, he's carded at 67 yesterday. He's 10 under. But happy to see Dunne kind of getting some form back and playing. He's at 3 under going into the final day. Because, you know, it has been a pretty rough ride on that. So golf starting to come back to some sort of normality.
Yeah, the UK swing, Reg, the 6 tournaments, and this is the first all over the UK for the next, obviously, 6 weekends and stuff. But, Jonathan Caldwell, fantastic stuff for him. But, great to see. Yeah, exactly. Doing well as well, coming back on. A few invitationals for him over the next few weeks, so nice to see him. It would be lovely to see him get his card back next season for Paul Aldred. Absolutely.
Excellent stuff. Well, we're going to be talking to Ken, of course, a little bit later on, just before 10 o'clock, and getting him direct from the World Championships, giving us his thoughts on a fantastic victory last night and how he's feeling going into the rest of the tournament. And also, who the main ones to look out for and what it feels like playing in those sort of empty stadiums that they're in at the moment. So don't forget to stay tuned for that. We're also going to have, just after the break, Dean Ryan. Galway starting this week again, an unusual situation, no spectators allowed into that, but the racing goes ahead. It's always an amazing week down in Ballybrit, so we'll see what happens with that and will it affect the quality of the race. And we'll be talking to Dean Ryan just after the break. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. We're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news, and it's great to be back. And as always, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. This week's magic moment is Aguero's goal, of course, from the 2011-2012 season, the one that broke so many United fans' hearts, that goal against QPR back in 2011-2012. So we'd love to hear from you as well. If you want to text us where you were, what your thoughts were, do you remember it, how big a moment was it, and let us know how you feel about it all as we're discussing that just after 10 o'clock. Well, I'm delighted now to be joined on the line after quite a lengthy breakaway. It didn't seem the same without them, Dean Ryan. Dean, you're very welcome back.
Hey Reggie, how are we keeping? Everyone well?
Everything great, thanks Dean. Good delighted stuff. To be back, delighted to be in here and chatting about all things sport again, slowly getting more and more stuff to talk about each week.
Yep.
How did you get through it yourself? It must have been tough enough.
That has been, isn't it? The drought in terms of sport and the changes to everyone's lives, I think it's taken a toll on a good few people, a few, you know, retrospectives been considered, I guess, but sport is back. We may not be able to go too much, and we may not be able to go and enjoy it in the live environment, but you know, it's back on, something to watch on the TV, and you know, keep the kids out of the house for a little bit, and again, a bit of TV time now and again is nice.
Well, speaking of TV time, of course, this week and the lack of crowds, as you mentioned, Galway races start this week, and down in Ballybrit, I remember as a young kid being brought to the Galway races regularly, pretty much every summer, going down there, and what it was like. It's a long time ago now, but it was an amazing festival. The atmosphere, the smells, the noise, the crack was just unbelievable. It's going to be a very strange feeling down there this week, but Galway goes ahead.
Goes ahead, yeah, and it's not going to lack for, you know, coverage, and the TV will still be blasting out each and every day. Of course, it kicks off on Monday and runs all the way through till Sunday. So, you know, very much looking forward to it. But Galway is one of those unique occasions where it is pretty much about the crowd. The racing is almost secondary. Now, they have a couple of cracking races there, and of course, the quality is decent enough, but there's so much racing over 7 days that I think without the crowd, some of it might get a little bit shown up. But I'm really looking forward to it. It's a meeting that, you know, on the calendar kind of bridges the gap between the flat season and the jump season, because you get the Galway Plate and the Galway Hurdle, which are just two fantastic races in the jumps calendar. The flat stuff, well, there'll be some massive premier handicaps that are hugely competitive, and they're very good. But I think without the crack of the crowd, it's going to lack something. It's just great that it's on. Unfortunately, it's coming a little bit too soon before people are allowed back on the race course. And that'll have an effect on it. You know, there's nothing like standing in a packed Galway, regardless of whatever kind of racing is going on. Just the atmosphere there is second to none, I have to agree.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I haven't been to Cheltenham, but I've always imagined it to be our sort of version of Cheltenham, in the sense that the amount of people that flock to the city for the week and the after party, let's call it.
That's what it's about. What it's about. I think I've said on here a couple of times, you know, go Galway, you need two wallets and two livers.
I would say that's a fair assessment of the whole thing. Before we get on to the main events in Galway, of course, I want to mention first of all Barry Geraghty announcing that he's finishing up to the last of the Holy Trinity with himself and Ruby and Tony McCoy, of course. Really is coming to the end of an era.
It certainly is, and he called him the Holy Trinity, and I think that's spot on. You know, AP McCoy was the first one to bow out, and what a career he had. Ruby Walsh then followed, and now he's dipping into media just like AP, and we're not really sure what Barry's going to do, because, you know, such a well-respected family of horsemen. He's probably going to continue to tip away with his horses at home and stuff, and he's got out in one piece, which is what you want for all these top riders. But that's another thing that's going to be missing from Galway, isn't it? I mean, how many times have we talked about Galway, and we've been talking about McCoy, Ruby and Barry, and none of them will be there. Great opportunity for other jockeys, of course, to come through and pick up some big rides. But what a career Barry Geraghty had, and what a gentleman he is, because he's always absolutely been a perfect ambassador for National Hunt Racing and racing in general. So yeah, big miss, I think, but you know, he's got out on his own terms, and he had such a fantastic Cheltenham Festival as well. I guess it felt like the right time to go out right at the top, which he certainly did.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's turn our attention to Galway this week. I know there'll be lots of our listeners who have some time on their hands this week to watch the TV and watch the racing in general, so they'll want all your tips. Where would you like to begin?
I think we spin through the first 4 days, because like the big races on those days are certainly punting highlights for me. The qualified riders race, the Connaught Hotel qualified riders race, 6:45 on Monday. Always a fascinating contest, because it gives these younger jockeys, you know, the misters and the misses, a real big chance to land a big winner. Dalton Highway for Dermot Weld will be very popular. Probably have to go off at top weight, 11 stone, 12 pound, likely to be on his back for wins in a hurdle race, and a big flat win as well for Dermot Weld. It seems to be a horse right at the top of his game at the moment, Dalton Highway. Rich Ritchie and Susanna Ritchie, they'll probably run three in their famous pink and green colours, Tiger Tap Tap, John Snow and Sharjah. Sharjah, of course, a Galway Hurdle winner in the past. That'd be interesting if that runs, maybe with Patrick Mullins on board. Interesting to keep an eye on another Willie Mullins horse, though, if it turns up here, and that's Foveros. It has a very light weight in that contest, 10 stone 7. Could even get the mount up of Jody Town then, possibly in those famous Luke McMahon colours. And you remember Luke McMahon and his son Aubrey McMahon teamed up to win with Uradel and Whiskey Sour a couple of times in the last few years. And so those colours would be pretty popular if Foveros does turn up there. I'd give that a big shout in there, along with Dalton Highway and that Connaught Hotel. qualified riders race. On the Tuesday, the big race is the Colm Quinn BMW Mile Handicap. That'll go at 6:45 as well. Aidan McGuinness will be very keen to get Saltonstall back in there with a winning chance. Looks actually to have a very strong chance of repeating victory from last year, only a couple of pounds higher, and seems to have prepped nicely for it. Big run in the Irish Lincoln prior to that. I thought Jessica Harrington's horse, though, Torin Sharman, could be a bit of a group horse lingering around in handicap still. Only six runs and was backed like defeat was out of the question at the Curragh earlier in the season. Hasn't quite happened for it. I thought it ran really well behind Nebo last time. So keep an eye on Torin Sharman on the Tuesday. I think that'll go really well. When we get to Wednesday and Thursday, what they've done there, Reggie, is they've split the cards up. Normally you get a bit of mix, you know, a bit of flat and a bit of jumps on the same day. But because of the COVID restrictions, they're keeping the flat jockeys into their days and the jump jockeys into their days, which makes a lot of sense. So you've got jumps racing there on the Wednesday and the Thursday. The Tote Galway Plate is on the Wednesday. We talked about a horse called Galvin when we were looking at Cheltenham. I think if David Russell had another go at that Northern Trust handicap chase at Cheltenham, he might go a bit closer, perhaps even beat Imperial Aura that day. He did win an Egg and Spoon race on his return here, just to show his well-being for Gordon Elliott. So Galvin's going to go a favourite for that, and I think he'd take a lot of beating. But it's a fascinating Galway Plate this year. Easy Game, who obviously ran in behind Forheen at the Flowgas at Leopardstown. You've got Peregrine Run, who's been such a masterful servant, 10 years old now for Peter Fiery, but keeps winning. He'll go well, I would have thought. Joseph's got a Cheltenham winner in there in early doors. Then you've got Spyglass Hill for Henry de Bromhead, should go well. And wherever Blazer turns up this week, I think Willie Mullins got a nicely handicapped horse in the JP McManus colours. But Galvin would be my pick in the Tote Galway Plate. 6-1 currently, and a favourite for the contest. On the Thursday, it's the Guinness Galway Hurdle. We've had some great winners of this in the past, likes of Miss United and Rebel Fitz, of course, Mick Winter, Tudor City. We've had Overturn, Charger have won it recently. The horses I like in it are Aramon and Felix Daisy. Felix Daisy actually looks like a well-handicapped hurdler who go back over fences once the jump season kicks back in. But Aramon and Felix Jay-Z look to top the betting. One Delation Turnpike Trip would be interesting for Charles Burns. Be plenty of money around for him if he gets stuck in. And keep an eye on an each-way chance for Charlie Parks. Aidan Anthony Howard's got this horse now in the JP McManus colours, formerly with Nicky Henderson, and used to be the work partner of horses like Bouvardet. Did manage to win on his first run for Aidan Anthony Howard. Keep an eye on that one. Aramax, another Cheltenham winner in there, Petit Mouchoir. It looks an absolutely brilliant renewal of that Guinness Galway Hurdle. I'd probably just side with Felix Deji to get it done. He is a grade one winner over Aramon in an Aintree novice hurdle if you go back a couple of years. He'd be, at the moment, he's a 9-1 chance for that race. So I'm really looking forward to the two big jumps races on Wednesday and Thursday. Mm-hmm. So Galvin in the Plate and Felix Deji in that Guinness Galway Hurdle. It's going to be a great, great Galway for sure. Unfortunately, we won't be there to witness it in person.
Absolutely. Well, no doubt we'll be watching it and glued to it. Great evening viewing right across the week in that Galway race. I'm looking forward to it immensely. No Ladies' Day this year, of course, on the Thursday due to the pandemic because there's no crowds, but I'm sure they'll make up for it next year. Now, across the water, I'm looking 15. I'm looking for our listeners. What have we got?
Yeah, it's a big day's racing, actually, in the UK. You've got the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Quidco Stakes at Ascot. Always a big race on the flat calendar. Enables in there, of course, Frankie Dettori and John Gosden. Disappointingly, only three runners going to line up for this at 3:35 at Ascot. There was going to be four, but Anthony Van Dijk is not going to go for Aidan O'Brien. He's going to side with Sovereign, who, of course, was a bit of a fluky win of an Irish Derby last year in Japan, who's been lined up to have a crack at Enable for this race. Enable's going to go off a 2-1 on favourite, so I don't think there's too much in me telling you I think that's probably the winner. Japan will give it a good go, but I do imagine Enable will come out on top. There are a couple of bets on the card that you should keep on side for your lucky 15. The 2:25 at Ascot, She Lear for David O'Mara and Tom Marquand, number 14 in that 2:25 is a 10-1 chance. He's just been a little bit unlucky not to finish a bit closer in big, big pots this season already. That's a 10-1 chance. I think that'll go well. In the 4:10, keep an eye on David Simcott's probably pretty well handicapped Media Storm, number 12 in that 4:10. It's going to go off around 4-1, favourite for that race. Looks a hot enough Betfred.com handicap, but I think he'll take all the beating off the bottom of the card. And over at York, Reggie, a couple of nice horses in there. Richard Fahey's prepped this one a little bit later on than others after this resumption of racing, but Hartswood, number 9, the 3:15, the Skybet Club handicap, that one's on the TV as well, has a low weight there. Thought he shaped really well when finishing third at this track on his first crackback. I think they've got a great chance under Paddy Mathers, so that would be in the bets. About 100 to 33 to 1 at the moment, Hartswood. And the other one, in a big race, actually, the Sky Bet York Stakes, the Group 2 on that card at York at 240. El Arkam, who won it last year, was a much bigger price last year at 7 to 1. He won't go, won't go off anything like that this year, around 2 to 1. Jim Crowley doing the steering. You can draw a line, I think, through the run. Last time out, this triple suit a bit better, 1 mile, 2 and a bit furlongs to go, and El Arkam will complete the lucky 15. So that's around 2 to 1 chance. So hopefully find a few winners before Galway, and of course Goodwood next week, get underway.
Excellent stuff. Just before I let you go, I know I was talking to David Atwood up in Leopardstown. They were hoping to get back by September. Not sure yet what's happening with that, with the crowds. But there was an experiment, I thought, going on in the UK with Goodwood. Was that this week where they were hoping to let 5,000 spectators in?
Yeah, I think it's on the 1st of August. They're going to try and get away with 5,000 people. I think it's restricted to members and maybe a few guests and, of course, a few more owners allowed on course. So, you know, the UK have been pushing, you know, as quicker perhaps than some people like to get all these things back underway. I think even the Premier League crowds might be coming back in October, sort of 25% capacity. So this is a good sign. I think the biggest miss for people, certainly during the flat season being returning in the UK, has been the owners who pay all their money, you know, to keep their very expensive hobby on the road and keep trainers and business haven't been able to go to the course. And you can imagine that, you know, you might get 60, 70 horses, even more on a track with the jockeys and everyone involved. But, you know, the owners are the ones who need to be in that parade ring and calling their horses home and stuff like that. So if they can get that sorted, that'll be a start. 5,000 people sounds like quite a lot, but Goodwood's a big place. You know, it's not really going to show, make too much effect to anything. So hopefully that goes well, because the sooner we can get back the owners on course, racing is going to suffer if we don't get that sorted, because when you pay so much money to keep a horse in training and you know, obviously you do it for that day on the track when they come good. If you can't be there, it's not the same watching on the TV.
Absolutely not. Well, Dean, as always, pleasure talking to you. Look forward to that lucky 15 and also your tips for Galway during the week. Enjoy the festival, watching it and punting about it, and hope it all goes well for you. And we'll catch up again next week.
Yeah, you take care.
Thanks a lot. Dean Ryan there, giving us all his input on Galway and plenty of insights there. We'll get that lucky 15 up on all of our media channels for you to have a look at. We're going to take a quick break now, but when we come back, we'll be talking to Ken live from the World Championships. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. Now, the World Championships have gotten underway over in the UK, and our own Ken Doherty, of course, is in the middle of it all, and got through his round last night, fighting off a bit of a late comeback from Fraser Patrick. So he's here on the line to talk to us. Morning, Ken.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, more importantly? You were 5-1 up. You were cruising. I was watching
you. I know. I was made sweat, I tell you that. I lost a few pounds walking around that table last night. I was sweating it, all right.
So I can tell you. I was watching it. I was there going, you missed one. I think it was in the, probably was the 7th or 8th frame maybe, where it looked like you had done the hard work. You were on the final red and you just, or black, sorry, and you just missed
black,
into the bottom right corner. And I thought,
oh, here we go, yeah. Well, I never do things easy, Rich. You know what I mean?
It was
too easy, and I wanted a bit more table time and a bit, you know, just to entertain the crowd.
Yeah, but you did that. Well done. And you got more practice in, and that's well done as well. But don't do it anymore.
No.
So who's up next? Third round, of course.
So I play tomorrow afternoon, 1:30, against Mark King. Mark King is, of course, he's been on the circuit for, you know, more than 20-odd years himself. I've known him since he was 12. When I first came over to England, I used to practice with him and Ronnie when they were only 12, you know. And his father used to, you know, drive me around to the tournaments as a professional. So I've known him a long, long time. He's a good lad, but he's going to be a tough match now tomorrow afternoon, you know. But I've been there and I have a fighting chance.
Yeah, that's what you have to have, and we're looking forward to seeing that. And I'm sure you'll get the job done. We're all fingers crossed here and praying. Don't sweat too much, Ken. Honestly,
there's so much pressure on here, though. You know, because it is the World Championships. Everybody's just vying to get to the Crucible. You know, to walk out into that beautiful arena. Now, I've been lucky to play there many, many times and come out the other end. You know, but it still gives you the goosebumps, gives you the adrenaline rush. You know, just to play in this championship and to try and get to the Crucible. It's an amazing place to play, you know. So that's what everybody's flying here for.
And tell me, Ken, what's it like? I mean, I know they're planning on a small crowd for the Crucible element of it. I mean, what's it like is it an eerie feeling around the place, even in the qualifiers?
Oh, it is. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're all in a bubble here in the hotel. We're all in lockdown, and you can't go outside. It's all, you know, you're ferried from the hotel. Everybody's being tested, so everybody is sort of COVID free. There hasn't been one positive test, which is great.
Yeah.
Between all the players, and there'll be 144 players in this qualifying. In these qualifying rounds.
And are you all in the one place? Are you all in the one
hotel? We're all in the one hotel. Really? We're all in the one hotel. Yeah, yeah. And we're ferried down to the venue in a bus and then ferried straight back. But there's nobody in the Institute of Sport. It's all completely locked down just for the snooker as well. So it's very eerie.
Are you allowed out to practice, Ken? Are you brought...
tables in the hotel.
In the hotel, okay.
Tables in the hotel. So you're allowed 1 hour a day. So you go and you book your time and you have your allotted time, and then the table is wiped down after you play, and all sanitized and everything like that. But it's quite surreal, to be honest, you know, and it's going to be, but they've done a very good job, I must say, and all the players, as I said, nobody's tested positive, so that's a good thing as well.
1 hour a day doesn't seem like much getting ready for a world championship.
No, but I think most of the practice is done. It should be before you get here, you know, and then you just need the hour a day just to keep yourself tuned in, you know, but because you're going to be playing the matches like every 2 days and anyway, so an hour a day is fine, you know.
Okay, and are you allowed to kind of mingle then with the other players, seeing as everybody's been tested?
Yeah, because we're all COVID-free, so you could, you know, before you had to eat in your room, but you can come down, you can have your breakfast or your lunch, you know, in a big dining room, so it's not too bad, you know, but you place your order for your food and they'll bring it in a bag or whatever. But the breakfast is like a buffet breakfast, just like in a normal hotel, you know. But it's completely different to, you know, before this COVID, you know, virus. It's very, very strange time. But the good thing about the Crucible is it's going to be one of the first, you know, sports to allow a crowd in. It's going to be about 300 at the Crucible. It normally holds about 900. So that's going to be, it's going to be difficult to manage, but hopefully it will be the beginning of, you know, lots of sports being allowing their spectators in.
And we touched on this last week, Ken. Have you spoken to the other players there? What's their feeling on crowds being allowed in?
I think most of the players are delighted that the crowds will be there, you know, because they, you know, you're playing with no audience, no clapping, you know, no atmosphere, a great adrenaline rush, you know. So I think most of the players, the only outspoken one has been Ronnie O'Sullivan. He said he wasn't going to play, but now he's overturned that decision. Which we all knew was going to come in anyway. So, but I think most of the players are delighted that there's going to be some crowd there, you know.
Excellent stuff. Well, look, I don't want to put you off your preparation, but I have to ask you, how good did it feel watching Liverpool do that during the week? I know how much...
Listen, and whoever played You'll Never Walk Alone on our show, Reggie, they're getting sacked in the morning. That's all I wanted to help you.
Well, there was an executive...
Heads are going to roll.
There was a producer's meeting here this morning, and they were worried about that very thing. They said, Doherty won't allow this. We can't put this. And you were overruled.
He only did it because I was over here. I know
your influence is gone. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, we have got the magic moment. Is Aguero's goal from 2011 2012? Do you remember it?
Oh, I do. Yeah,
heartbreaker for United fans.
Heartbreaker. Yeah, yeah. I will listen. If you know you beat Leicester tomorrow, I'll be happy. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, well, of course, I know your good friend Jimmy White. We don't have time to talk to him today, but he's there alongside you, and he's done well too.
Got a big match tonight. Yeah, he's playing Robert Milkins tonight, so he's got a big match tonight. So hopefully he'll be able to play well as well. True.
Send Jimmy our regards. He's a great friend of the show, and tell him we wish him the best of luck. And Eurosport's great having the coverage on that as well, so we can watch the snooker as it's unfolding and everything's happening. So we'll be watching him, and of course we'll be watching you against Mark King. And I know you're going to do it, Kent. We've every faith.
Hopefully,
in it,
hopefully. Thanks, Reg.
All right, bud. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care. Thanks.
Bye bye. Ken Doherty coming to us from the World Snooker Championships. He's got his next round, third round match, qualifier match against Mark King on Sunday, of course, having overcome a little bit of a scare last night from Fraser Patrick, but he got the job done, and it sounds weird being over there at the moment. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break now. Still plenty to come on the show with rugby and football. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan, with thanks to InsureMyVant.ie. We're here every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with all of your sporting news, and it's great to be back. And as usual, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. We'd love to hear from you. Our special this week is Magic Moments in Sport, and of course we're looking back on that fantastic magic moment when Sergio Aguero broke many United supporters' hearts by getting that last, well, into injury time goal in 2011-2012 against QPR and snatching the title away from United. So we'd love to hear your thoughts on that as we get into discussions on that now with Declan and Paul. But before I do, I just want to mention Dean Ryan has a few text messages coming in just to give you that lucky 15 again from Dean Ryan. It's the Ascot 225 Shillier, the Ascot 410 is Media Storm, and then we go to York in the 240 LR Quam, and then in York it's 350 and it's Hartswood. So it's Shillier, Media Storm, LR Quam, and Hartswood. That's the lucky 15 from Dean Ryan for this week. Okay, so as I mentioned, Aguero is the magic moment from this week. I mean, I think it probably stands out in the memory of United fans more than others. It might not be someone like an Arsenal fan like me, probably wouldn't be all that pushed about it, more happy than anything else. What do you reckon, Declan?
Remember clearly, right, sitting at home on the television, and they were playing QPR,
yeah,
Manchester City, that particular afternoon, and hoping something dramatic could happen, and when it fell to Aguero, fantastic finish, tremendous scenes, and the commentary from Martin Tyler that particular afternoon, right up there with some of the most iconic moments in football broadcasting history. Really, really memorable day. And of course, that started the Manchester City bandwagon that has rolled on quite impressively since, and their season isn't over yet, of course, because they still have the Champions League to play for.
Absolutely. Let's refresh people's memories on it.
It's finished at Sunderland. Manchester United have done all they can. That Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again. 2 goals in added time for Manchester City to snatch the title away from Manchester United. Stupendous! The top club in the country, Manchester City, champions in the 20th year of the Premier League.
Quite incredible. And that, as you said, iconic commentary there, the Aguero and the emotion, and you can tell that, you know, the Tyler's just as caught up in the moment as everybody else. It's just a fan's reaction, a football supporter's reaction, and it summed up the joy and the heartbreak all in one moment. And it was quite an incredible piece of sporting history, there's no doubt about it. But I think, Paul, maybe, you know, you have to remember as well, the goal, yes, amazing, but the goal before that too, that was in the 91-30 into the game as well. Like, I mean, they were 2-1 down with 3.5 minutes left to go. I mean, that goal in its own right was a cracker as well. The second goal.
You'll never walk alone first. To go into the Aguero's... Oh, Ken, I know he's in Sheffield. Listen, as Declan quite rightly said, and we'll touch back on that, Martin, the commentary on it. What City fans, like, you know, this is just magic. To do it over United, fair enough, by a couple of points, whatever many points. To do it in the drama that is the last couple of minutes, and 2-1 down to QPR. You have to put absolutely everything into context. We're going to talk about a few more bits and pieces of last day drama, but that's the City drought. You know, they were, you know, coming good. The noisy neighbour, they were starting to pipe up, as Fergie called them. But 2-1 down in 91 plus minutes gone, and then, you know, they scored the 2-all, and then it was, and then the United result had come through, and you could see the pictures filtering to Man City fans being disgusted. United beat Sunderland 1-0, and if you cut to those players, they was kind of celebrating. They didn't know whether it was over, whether they had it done or not. And then the split screen, this has been, I think, great the last day, a couple of seasons, where you're watching one match and you get the split screen or an update at a certain ground. You know it's either good or bad news when you see he was attacking. And then, of course, Balotelli with a ball through. QPR's defence was questionable, but however. And Yeah, what a moment for City fans. This is killing me, Reg. But what a moment for City fans. It was fantastic.
How Liverpool fans, even Arsenal fans, fans of other top Premier League clubs felt when United were on top of the tree for so many years listening to you all the time.
That's
so
very true. Very true, Declan.
But it is what makes sport amazing, are those moments. And there have been other examples of it as well over the years.
Yeah, quite a few, I suppose.
What ones stand out most for you?
Well, there's two really, Reg. One would be that Michael Thomas for Arsenal on the last night of the season. It was a Friday night game. It was shown on terrestrial television at the time, and it was at Anfield. Liverpool were on the brink of the league title, but Arsenal came and spoiled the party with Michael Thomas and that famous Robbie Keane-like celebration at the end. And then what did he do shortly after? He actually joined Liverpool, didn't he? that was a great end to that particular season. Another one that stands out mightn't be in to the top of most people's list would be a guy called Jimmy Glass. Jimmy Glass was a goalkeeper, and he was on loan to Carlisle United. And this was serious pressure on them because they had to win to stay in the Football League at that particular time. And Jimmy Glass came up with the last attack of the game, scored the winning goal and kept Carlisle in the Football League. So there's many more iconic moments like that over the years, I'm sure. What can you remember, Paul?
Both being a United fan, I go with the good and the bad. The City one, fair enough that we put that down to a bad as well. But you're going to the good at the start of the 10 magical days for Manchester United in 99. They were, it was all going into the last game. I think they had Spurs at home, and Spurs took the lead to Ferdinand and Arsenal fans, you know, for those couple of minutes. But then United came back to win 2-1. Not as dramatic, obviously, not as exciting and stuff like that. But that was the start, and then that was the league done that day, and then obviously went on FA Cup and European Cup. The other side of it for Manchester United fan was the Blackburn travelling to Anfield, and the time Blackburn had won the league itself and Kenny Dalglish being manager and stuff like that. Liverpool actually doing United a favour that day and beating Blackburn. But that's kind of the first times I remember the split screen, and what's happening at Upton Park kept coming in, and it was United at West Ham, and I just remember the kitchen sink being thrown at West Ham in the United, were in the black jersey at the time and stuff, and they just could not score. Andy Cole had a couple of chances. Steve Bruce, I remember. Everything was thrown at them that day. And West Ham just held out. And like that then, Liverpool fans, not exactly, you know, too disgusted with that either. Tim Blackburn with Kenny Dalglish there, lift the trophy. So listen, it was, both sides were put. Last day drama is fantastic.
We have this situation tomorrow, lads, simply because of COVID-19. I mean, who knows what it would have been like 3 or 4 months ago? You know, had we not had this pandemic, and you know, I think probably Leicester would have qualified for the Champions League handily enough. They had the real momentum behind them at that particular moment in time. They obviously don't have it tomorrow, and they'll be looking to rediscover their mojo, so to speak. Against, isn't it Manchester United they're playing tomorrow?
It is indeed. Yeah, it isn't.
Come on, Brendan.
It's hard to build it up to quite the same level. There's no doubt about it. But I suppose, you know, all of those memories that you have mentioned there are huge and stand out in people's minds. But for me, shifting codes, of course, there have been so many similar situations. See, rugby is slightly different in the sense that the league doesn't work in the same format, so it tends to be cup rugby and knockout rugby and one-off matches. And I mean, the obvious ones that stand out in people's memories are the miracle match in Thomond Park where Munster beat Gloucester. They needed 4 tries. They got there in the very end.
2006 was that? The miracle of Munster? I think that was on TV, if I'm not mistaken, last night.
It was which?
It was on.
It's a coincidence. But I mean, there you go. There's a classic example of the magic moments and how sport is never over till it's over and the underdogs coming through on it. The All Blacks have done it on numerous occasions in games that they've done in Bledisloe Cup matches, in Tri-Nations Championship games and everything else. But of course, and again, I think it was on during the week, the obvious one for that from our point of view was the heartbreak in 2018 when they did it to us in the Aviva Stadium. I was commentating on the game, couldn't believe what we were watching. It looked like Ireland had the job done. Everything was in the bag, and the All Blacks, being the All Blacks, just never gave up and got there and managed to score in the corner in injury time and break everybody's heart in the stadium, because at that stage, of course, we were looking to get that win over the All Blacks, and it just wasn't quite there. And then the other one that really sticks out in my mind is Rob Howley. We're going right back to 2004 here, where Wasps against Claremont in the final of the Champions Cup, and there was a mistake made just over the line. I think it was Poitrineau might have been the player that it was that made the mess up, but he fullback at the time for Claremont, and Rob Howley just pouncing on an opportunity and a missed ball that goes over the try line, scoring that try and clinching the title for Wasps. So I mean, that is the joy that is sport, and the way that it can bring people's mind to the fore. I mean, some text messages coming in on that Aguero, going back to it again. The commentary is more iconic than the goal. It's a fair point. As I said, it certainly brings out the emotion. Other text messages coming in. What a moment where I think Blackburn winning the title in the last game in 94-95 was a better moment. Is that a fair comment?
For Blackburn Rovers fans, maybe.
Yeah, but it was something else. Aguero cemented himself as a club legend in that moment. Was another text message we're getting in here. Lots of them coming in. Joe Hart running around between his own goalposts. What a moment. I'll never forget that. So, yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. That Aguero moment is certainly sticking in people's memories. But
there's been, obviously, it's not just, you know, winning league itself and stuff like that. We'll see tomorrow as well. You know, Villa fans beyond tenterhooks, you know, Watford fans as well. Of course, you got leagues and even going for places. And it just was brought to my attention there, just the Arsenal beating Newcastle to pip Spurs for fourth place, and the whole lasagna gate, I think, was that one? Where the Spurs team came down mysteriously the night before with a bad dose. And yeah, Arsenal pipping them to fourth spot, and a good few Arsenal fans, I know, are happy with that one. But there's been like relegation stuff as well, you know, Everton being one or two cases to mention there too as well. Some great stuff last days of seasons, and as I said, when there's an awful lot to play for, you know, it's the excitement of going right down to the wire, and it's brilliant.
And of course, Manchester City are still at the core of all this as well. We know that they're safely into Europe in that next season and that, but if they hadn't had that ban overturned recently, there'd be one less place to play for tomorrow, wouldn't there?
That's so true, yeah, exactly. Sorry, I gotta take a step back. The 05-06 season was the Lasagna Gate with West Ham denying Spurs came out. Do you remember that one? Did you ever hear that? Those stories, no? Spurs, you know, in the hotel the night before.
Yeah. I was busy playing
rugby. Well, that's true, yeah. We'll take you back, Reg. Yeah, going for it. And of course, the stories came out. Apparently, there was a. I heard somebody during the week, one of the former Spurs players, saying he looked around the dressing room that morning, and nerves on the last day are fair enough, you know, a big game going into the Champions League, but he looked at some of the players and they were ghosts, like it was more, and he was like, there's something not right here. And then the text messages start, you know, and stuff like that, and then the conspiracy theorists that there was an Arsenal chef in a hotel, and then it was a dodgy case of lasagna apparently. But listen, there's been more as well. Carlos Tevez had for West Ham at Old Trafford as well. That was, you know, again, United I think had the league wrapped up at that stage, but it was for Tevez went on a massive scoring route for West Ham to keep them up too. Loads of stuff.
Yeah, there's no doubt about the Premier League, but of course, Declan. Our own GAA, yeah. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. If you ever want a sport that would provide dramatic moments, dramatic finishes and incredible endings, it's the GAA, whether it be the football or even more so the hurling. Because, I mean, with 90 seconds left in a hurling match, there can be 3 or 4 points scored.
Yeah, I suppose there's two main things I can think of there. One would be the obvious one, which was Seamus Darby in 82 for Offaly against Kerry, which is revisited every so often. Yeah. That's probably the most iconic one. And then I think back to, you mentioned hurling there, Offaly and Limerick, 96, I think it was. Might be mistaken on the year, but the famous Offaly comeback that year against Limerick had the game won, but Offaly being Offaly, never say die and all the rest of it, battled their way back and dramatically won the game. But there are so many other examples of it. And I suppose from a Dublin point of view, you'd have to obviously mention Stephen Cluxton in 2011 when he stepped up to send over that free against Kerry in front of the Hill. That's a never to be forgotten moment, and it started the current bandwagon that we're all still enjoying.
Let's not forget Paddy Mullen's famous moment as well. When Kerry beat them.
Try not to remember that one. Yeah.
There's another example of it. There are so many.
I heard a man one day in Crow Park telling me, you know, great one. He says, I only come into matches for the last 15 minutes. He says, the first hour, you know, you can have it. But yeah, like GA, you could could be here for a while with some last gasps and stuff like that. Winners, fantastic. But that's the drama of sport. That's why we love it.
That's why we love it indeed.
That's why it's important as well. That's that, you know, the fans can get back as quickly as possible to it as well, because we're all missing that element of it.
That's what sport is all about.
Absolutely,
it's exactly what it's all about. It's the fact that you never know what's going to happen. You know, in you can watch television, you can watch movies, you can watch whatever the hell you like. You kind of might get an inkling of an ending. You might get a few hints. Some people might have the storyline worked out, but in sport, you never know. It's about, you know, people battling to get the ball or get something across the line or whatever. And you can just never tell in that moment of live sport what's going to happen. And that's why we love it so much. And that's what makes it what it is. There's no doubt about it. When you talk about magic moments, Sergio Aguero's goal is right up there with the very best of them. And from 2011-2012, whether you were on the right side or the wrong side of that, it was still an iconic moment. And that's our magic moment for this week. We'll be revisiting another brilliant moment again next week. We're going to move on now to rugby, of course. And there's not a huge amount happening just yet, but there's plenty to talk about in the sense that there are things opening up and there is a resumption starting off. And all of the league matches from the Guinness Pro 14 have been printed and put out there. So in August they'll be played in the Aviva Stadium, is the one that's the big one, of course, Leinster versus Munster, and then Connacht will take on Ulster on August the 23rd. So it's slowly but surely starting to get back, Dick. You're looking forward to another sport opening up?
Yeah, absolutely, Reg, absolutely. It's how much you missed it over the last number of months, and some of the channels have done excellent work with some of the what I'd call the retro games being shown as well. But yeah, it'd be very nice to have it back, and I'm sure for the players to get some sense of normality back as well. It's been very, very difficult for them as professionals. That's their job. It's their livelihood. They've had such a long period of downtime and lockdown now, and they're coming out the other side of it. So hopefully we can see some good quality games if and when they do restart. And like every other sport, get the supporters back into the grounds as well.
Absolutely. Well, that's the key to it, is trying to get people back in. There's been a lot of work going on behind the scenes, talking to a lot of people still involved in the game, and it's been a very difficult time for them, very hard for them to manage it. There's been testing going on, there's constant screening of players, monitoring, making sure that they're outside of it, the players are back training and they're back in contact with each other. They've got to be so careful then, though, that they're not moving beyond their boundaries when they're in their downtime, when they're having their private lives, because obviously one person could bring it into camp and reinfect everybody again. So huge amount of pressure on the players to try and live a fairly solitary life at the moment.
The other thing is, everyone now is starting from a level playing field again.
Yeah.
It's like we were talking about in the football, in the European places race in the Premier League. A team like Leicester had momentum. They've lost it, and I'm sure it's probably the same in rugby as well.
No question at all. It's going to be incredible to see how both Munster and Leinster react on the 22nd of August after such a long layoff, and Connacht Ulster equally. You could argue that, you know, Leinster were on a bit of a roll, and obviously with their European Cup run and, you know, all of that kind of stuff going on, they would have been feeling pretty confident. But you're right back to square one again. It's pre-season, you know, and your pre-season match is one of your biggest ever derbies, so it's a real strange one. But it's going to be, it's juicy as well. It'll be well anticipated. So yeah, I mean, I suppose you can, I said this before the show, you can work as much as you like on your physical fitness and that will be fine. These players are not going to be lacking any of that. But it's the skills, the ball handling, the reactions, those types of things. They're the ones that may be lacking a bit. It's very hard to reproduce that on the training pitch to the same level that you get in match intensity. So that's going to be interesting to see how it works. But it's a step in the right direction, and it's leading on towards some great stuff. And of course, what it is leading on to is the announcement, of course, that the 2020 Guinness Six Nations will be accommodated in the last 2 weeks of October, according to temporary international calendar that World Rugby have put together. So that would mean that Ireland would be playing France on Halloween. So it's important.
Paris.
Yeah, well, you know, as you do in the Six Nations Halloween. But it's important that they do get game time in before that. So they'll have their Pro 14 matches and Champions Cup matches and everything else before they get to that level. So,
just in terms of injuries and that, Red, more so long-term injuries that the provinces and indeed Ireland may have had as well, are there players now going to see game time that wouldn't have the big in the old
one,
situation?
The big one, Declan, is, I mean, you know, there's not all that much chat about it because players have had chance to recovery and most injuries have been dealt with. But the big one is Dan Levy. Dan Levy was probably the greatest talent around coming out of Ireland. It must be nearly 18 months ago now since Dan got injured. And everybody's talking about a phenomenal player. Really, really good talent for the future and a huge part of Ireland's plans, and picked up an absolutely horrific injury. And you wondered whether he'd... An injury that was career-threatening, being honest about it. A lot of people wondered, will he ever come back from it? And the word on the street is that he is back from it and that he's made a fantastic recovery ahead of schedule, and that we could, you know, see Dan taken to the pitch again very shortly. So that's fabulous news. There'll probably be a few little hiccups along the way. Maybe he'll be eased back into it, let's say. But that's fantastic news from what I've been hearing about that. So that's probably the standout one in that sense. Joey Carberry, I suppose, from Munster would be the other one that they'll be watching carefully. He's not quite there yet, I believe, but not far off. He's kind of the great hope down in Munster. They've signed well, although their players, Snyman and these guys, are not actually... there's confusion. I'll put to you this, there's confusion because there's now talk about what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere, and it may affect Snyman and these guys and when they can play. So I won't even get into it because it's too complicated. But Munster have signed very well and have got some good recruits. So they've bolstered their squad very well. But Carberry is one that they really will want to get back on the pitch and doing things sooner rather than later.
And is there going to have to be much restructuring of the rugby calendar year now? Because this season has been so truncated.
It's mad. It's absolutely crazy. Basically, the way it looks now is that there's a straight run from August right the way through until the Lions Tour, which is in 2021, without a break. So there's a lot of concern over player welfare. There's a lot of concern over the number of matches that are going to be played and everything else. There's a competition being touted out there for kind of October, that window, and sort of a mini competition. And there's talk of Fiji joining the Six Nations as well on the back of this, because they're going to come and play in this mini tournament. So there's talk of them, they should be the team in, and maybe Italy out of Six Nations. There's all sorts of weird stuff going on. There's huge talk in the background with regard to CBC buying over rugby and taking up huge stakes and shares in that, which would mean that they would control everything, you know, in terms of what matches are played, then different types of leagues. We may see the abandoning of Pro 14, we may see a Pro 16. It's very much all up in the air and all over the place. It's a turbulent situation, and it's a turbulent environment at the moment in rugby.
Well, that's rugby now at the elite level, the professional level in Ireland. But what about the grassroots? What about Saturday and Sunday afternoon club games?
Good that you mentioned that. They've restructured that as well, Declan. So they've gone back to a more of a localised league, let's say, where clubs will be playing in a more controlled environment rather than where they were all over the country before, and then coming together at the end for a round robin type semi-final, quarter-final type thing, and it's a good setup. And what you're going to see is more local derbies of old coming back again, which is great. So you'll have rivalries in Munster, Ulster, Connacht, Leinster all coming back. So a lot of work has been done with that, with a view to just trying to get the clubs back functioning. But it's also trying to contain the amount of travel so that it's not kind of getting out of control too quickly. So good work being done there too. Not sure exactly the date when that recommences, but it's on the cards. That's all. I haven't got any more time to talk about rugby. I could sit here all day talking about it, but we better give it a break there because there are one or two other things in sport that people might like to talk about. And more importantly, Declan, the club... You mentioned it there for rugby, the club championships back, and we're going to be looking at everything that's happened last weekend, obviously with the hurling and then the football as well this week. And also I want to have a chat with you about the decisions maybe about what's going on up north with their possibility of 400 spectators and 200 down here and what's happening, and club president John Horing asking for that 500 cap to be increased sooner rather than later. We're going to take a quick break now, but when we do come back, I'll be talking to Declan on all things GAA. Don't go away. And you're very welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport with me, Reggie Corrigan. Your text messages are coming in fast and furious. Keep them coming on 087 11 55 777. One interesting comment here I picked up during the break was, hi lads, someone commented that if VAR had been in back then, it would have taken away from that magic moment for Aguero. Fair point. It could well have been ruled out and it could well have been looked back on again, but thankfully there was no VAR then, so we still have that magic moment. And more magic moments, as you said, we spoke about it in the GAA, and it's all back, and it came back with the big defeat last week for Bowden in their hurling, Declan, which was a bit of a strange one, where Crokes beat them by 14 points.
Yeah, nobody going into a sun-splashed Parnell Park last Sunday afternoon, Reg, the 200 people that were allowed in, could have envisaged that type of a result in the game, that type of a margin of victory for either side. You have to give Kilmacud Crokes credit, they were outstanding on the day, played some smashing hurling. They were more than matched in the first half by Bowden. But in the second half, they just really put their foot on the gas and took off, and really sent out a very strong and powerful message to the rest of their challengers for the title this year in the county, that they mean business. Now, you'd qualify that by saying, look, they've had a lot. Everyone's had a long layoff, as we well know, and it can be difficult to know what's going to happen to a team until they cross the white line. Everything went very well for Crokes last week in the second half, not so well, obviously, for Bowden. So Crokes will take tremendous confidence from the victory, naturally enough, but they won't get overly carried away with it. And on the other side of the fence, Bowden, although they'll be very disappointed with the manner of the defeat, won't be too downbeat about it either. We'll take it into their next game, and I wouldn't be surprised if these two come head-to-head later on in the championship again.
Yeah, no doubt Bowden will bounce back. All the other big guns kind of was business as expected, wasn't it?
Pretty much in the A Championship. The teams you would expect to be there or thereabouts at the business end of the season all came through their games. The likes of Luke and Sarsfield, St. Bridget's, Craig Caron, as well. So the second round of that championship is actually on midweek next week, Reg. So some teams' seasons will be ended next Wednesday, and other teams will be looking forward to knockout stages of the competition after those games.
Excellent. Okay. Well, the football as well this week. It's going to be some very interesting games in this one. And of course, Bowden, the defending champions, have an interesting one themselves, their first match at home.
They do indeed. And before we talk about that, so just something I missed last week on the slot, which was remiss of me, and I apologise to all the good people of Ballyboden and St. Enda's for this. They lost their former chairman recently, Brendan Moran, tremendous driving influence on the Fairhouse Road, and sympathies indeed to all of Bowden and indeed to his family as well. A very family well steeped in Dublin sport. His brother Kevin, of course, won All-Ireland medals with Dublin, played for United and Ireland, and his other brother Ray, who you may or may not have come into contact with, Reg, in your time as a professional rugby player, is a top surgeon in Santry Clinic out there as well. So sympathies to the Moran family and to Bowden on that loss as well. But they do open up the defence of their Dublin and Leinster club championship titles tonight. They are at home to Clontarf on the Fairhouse Road at 6:30. That's going to be an interesting one. Tarf, of course, with Jack McCaffrey involved, but also Chris Barrett now, the 2017 Mayo All-Star, has joined their ranks as well. So Bowden will be looking to take up where they left off last year.
Very good. Ray examined my knee when they first opened the Century Clinic.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's going back a while now, but yeah, he gave me a little bit of guidance on it, and it helped no end, and yeah, I'm still able to hobble around on it with my own knee, and yeah, not a false one just yet.
Well, you put so many quality sports people and indeed ordinary individuals back on their feet as well. Tremendous guy.
Yeah, absolutely. The ladies are back as well, of course, their club championships.
Yeah, just before we go into that, just mention some of the other games that are on this evening. Thomas Davis last year's beaten finalists, of course, are at home to Round Towers in Lusk on the Kiltipper Road at 6:30. St Jude's playing Nafina at Parnell Park. Castleknock taking on Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua in a local derby there. Whitehall Colum Kills playing St Vincent's, and Ballymun Kickham's playing Skerry's Harps. Tremendous games to look forward to this evening. But once again, as with the hurling last week, Reg, the advice from the Dublin County Board is do not go to any of those venues today unless you have a ticket. You will not gain admission to the grounds. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely. You won't get anywhere near it. None of this crack, lads, of we'll rock up, sure they'll sneak us in the back gate. No. That doesn't happen in these situations. And yet, to be fair, you shouldn't put the people in these clubs in that situation. Don't make it awkward for them. You know it's hard, hard enough as it is. Don't put them in that awkward position. We've got to stick to the rules just for a little bit longer.
Absolutely. Just on the ladies, their club championship starts next Wednesday night as well. Foxrock Cabinteely, of course, are the current queens of the county. They'll be looking for six in a row. They've changed manager this year. Nipper McNally is involved there now as boss. So they start off against Thomas Davis, who they beat in the semi-final last year. They've been semi-finalists for the last 2 years. The club, of course, of Player of the Year, Siobhan McGrath, last year. So they'll be very determined to get something out of that. And they now know, of course, their championship draw for the TG Carter Championship. They're going to start on October the 31st or November the 1st that weekend against Donegal. Second round then is against Waterford the following week, November 7th or the 8th. And they have the semi-final the 28th or 29th of November. And the final will be played on Sunday, December the 20th at Croke Park, the senior and intermediate championship final. So no doubt Mick Bowen and the rest of his management team, indeed I saw Claire Butterley out of the game on the Kiltipper Road the other night, will be out watching the players, what their form is like ahead of the start of collective training ahead of that championship.
Very good. Well, be interesting to see how that goes and look forward to getting some results from you. We chat again. There's been a bit of controversy, and the GAA is never far from it, but I suppose there's two elements of it. The first one, I suppose, that kind of really caught the headlines and was all over social media all week was Dean Rock and his kicking clinics and his training and coaching kicking seminars that he's doing, and people are not too happy about the prices that he's charging and things like that. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it's like anything else. If you're not happy with the price, you don't buy the product. Mm. Simple as that. I would say fair play to Dean. He's been entrepreneurial, and he has a talent that you know, is available for commercial exploitation. I've absolutely no problem with that. But as I say, if people do have a problem with the price, they don't pay it. People have a problem perhaps with the amateur ethos of the GAA. Is that perhaps in question here? I don't think so, to be honest with you. It's a commercial business operation. It's going to be taxed, so I've absolutely no problem with it, and I wish the lad well with it. Just seems to me personally to be just a lot of begrudgery towards him, you know?
I found it strange personally, the reaction to it.
Would you be surprised, Reg, in Ireland?
Well, I mean, okay, fair enough. Maybe I shouldn't have said I'm surprised. It is par for the course if we're honest about it, but how will I phrase it then? I'm disappointed with the reaction to it. That's the way I'll put it. I think, a bit like yourself, you know, you pay for what you get, number one. But number two, I think people have been very undermining or very sort of flippant about the fact that, you know, this guy, Dean, has set this up and he's set up a business opportunity. They don't seem to take into account the thousands, and I mean thousands, of hours of practice and training and technique work and commitment and years that have gone into becoming the best at something that you do. If you were going to a top consultant in surgery and doctor or whatever, we mentioned Ray Moran, you wouldn't think twice about paying the top dollar for it. If you were wanting to get work done in your house, you get it done by professionals. I don't kind of get the reaction to it, and I think it's very much a hangover to the amateur status. I think it's like, how dare someone think that they can go and make money off the back of the GAA and everything is for free in the amateur status? That's simply not the case. People get paid.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a good physio in your club, they get paid. If you've got a good fitness guy in their club, they get paid. They're not all doing it voluntarily. And don't kid yourselves things that they are. So I don't quite get why the reaction has been as strong as it has.
There is a problem, as we well know, within the GAA of under the counter payments, right? Mm. It just seems to be brushed under the carpet, not really discussed that much per se. This is quite the opposite. It's
a legitimate business practice and all the rest of it. So personally, I'd agree with what you say. I don't see a problem with it. And
it's not hiding. I mean, the prices are out there. As you said, if you don't want it, don't pay it. He's been very public about these are the rates. This is that, you know. And, you know, I remember well in the and you'll say, okay, well, rugby's professional, you know, but like going back to the very beginning when rugby had just turned from amateur to professional, there were kicking coaches. There are still kicking coaches. They're independent contractors for the most part, because there wouldn't be enough work for a full-time kicking coach for a lot of clubs. So they go around to different clubs and they offer their advice on that. And they charge top dollar. Dave Aldrin and these guys were around in the very beginning of all of that when it first started. And it's like everything else. This is a new endeavour. So because it's a new thing and it's a new and a player of great renown doing it, there's going to be a little bit of a reaction. But I guarantee you, your club starts banging over points from all over the place and scoring frees, you'll think it's the best money you ever spent. So it's a bit of a storm in a teacup for me. But yeah. I don't know, Paul, what do you think?
Listen, yeah, as you quite rightly said, sorry, Reg, if you're getting the best advice from a best player who, come the time, come the hour, can step up and stuff like that, and as you quite rightly said, the hour, you don't see the hours put in and the training and everything else, and you know,
why and that not? Is huge,
absolutely. That's massive, absolutely. And yeah, like, yes, the price is definitely being out. We have to give this bit of balance. You will see kids, you know, looking. Unfortunately, kids may not be able to go and stuff like that as well. Price is a small bit pricey as well, but like, I mean. But as you said, what you're getting for top dollar is a great product. And
I mean, he has gone to clubs. He has gone to schools.
Yeah.
He's given a lot of his own free time over the last number of years as well. So
yeah.
It'd be interesting to see if other top players and hurlers take such an approach as well, which they would be entitled to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The other quick one then that we discuss is the crowd situation. We're still facing a situation here where it's 200 people at the game. As you know, as we mentioned, ticket only. Up north, they're talking about making that 400. Now, I don't quite get this. I understand the two government jurisdictions are different, and the government ruling is, as we heard with Goodwood, they're trying to open things up in the UK and they're trying to allow bigger crowds in. But I would have thought the GAA, as a national organisation, would have taken the stand, no, we're all in this together. If it's 200 in the south for the 26 counties, then it's 200 for the six counties.
Yes, there's a lot of merit in that argument, but you also mentioned the point there that they are two different jurisdictions. And that's the basic core problem. The Northern Ireland Executive have lifted the ban on people, the numbers that they can allow into outdoor sporting events. That's their own prerogative based on their own medical advice. We have it based on ours, and that's where the core problem is.
Mm.
Yeah, the GAA is a 32-county organisation, and there was always going to be difficulties with this approach, if you like, taken by the governments and how it would impact on them. So, yeah, I would say that if they could allow 400 at games in the north, there's absolutely no reason why they couldn't allow 400 down here. We saw Parnell Park last week.
Well, they can't because the government won't allow it.
Well, that's the core problem.
Yeah, but,
and hopefully on August the 10th, that may change.
Yeah, well, personally, I would have thought maybe just a little bit of solidarity on this for a little bit longer. I mean, cross-border counties up, you know, there's going to be a lot of club games and everything else that are on the border with each other.
Yeah, but if you look at it as well, Reg, I mean, there doesn't seem to be a coordinated response or a shared response between the governments north and south on a whole range of issues in
absolutely.
Relation to COVID. So,
listen, we could be here all day talking about that. I've got to move off GAA because we still have football to come, and I've got to take one more break. Great, Declan, chatting to you as always on the GAA side of things. You're going to be still with me here for the League of Ireland, but we're going to be talking to Alan Cawley, and I want to talk to him about the Watch LOI, which of course is the new streaming service that has been put together for the League of Ireland matches, which is very interesting, and get his thoughts on it, and of course the end of season across the water. Don't go away. And you're welcome back to the final part of Dublin's Talking Sport this morning. Delighted now to be joined on the line for the football by the host of Cawley's Call, the wonderful new podcast, the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Reggie. Good morning. You're building it up, fair play to you. That's some intro.
Well, I tell you, no pressure. No pressure. It better be good after all that. No.
Exactly. It better be. But, it's kicked off a couple of weeks ago, Reg, with a little. We had a launch show with Vinnie Perth and Keith Long, which went really well. So it's going to be based around, obviously, all things Irish football, mainly League of Ireland week to week. And that's why it's coinciding with the return of the league. So we've a weekly show that will start this Monday, and it'll go out every Monday with Stewie Byrne and John O'Sullivan. It'll be the guests on it every week. And I'll also carry on with some of the one-on-one interviews that we've been doing during the lockdown as well, and they'll be spread out every couple of weeks. But there'll be a weekly show about Irish football every week starting this Monday, and to be available on all platforms from Tuesday morning. And our very own Paul Morris is helping us out as well, so fair play to him.
So he knows nothing about it. He's a golfer these days.
Well, there'll be no talk of golf on this podcast.
You'll have a job to shut him up. That's all I'll say to you. You'll do well. But listen to me. It's great to see League of Ireland getting so much publicity and so much chat at the moment. And in particular, along with your podcast, is this Watch League of Ireland, which of course has been launched, which is a streaming service to show the games, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great news, Reggie. It was launched during the week, and obviously there's been a lot of, I suppose, debate, discussion, negotiation around the resumption of the league for the past 3 or 4 months, and we have been the slowest to restart the league amongst all, I suppose, the summer leagues around Europe, which was disappointing. But I suppose the formation of our league with part-time teams, full-time teams, amateur teams, there was a lot to discuss, and of course you're never going to please everyone. But thankfully those discussions are finished now, and we do have a restart date, which is obviously next week, and they launched a streaming service during the week, which is trying to generate money, I suppose, and revenue for the clubs without no fans coming to the grounds, because of course all the games will be behind closed doors. So it's a brilliant venture. I think it's very good. It's only a starting point really in terms of where maybe potentially it could go, but I think it's really good value. It's €55 to cover all the games, and there's 55 games included, which is brilliant. So if you're to work it out, obviously it's only a Euro game. The games are going to be staggered as well across the weekend, so you have 2 on a Friday, 2 on a Saturday, and I think 1 on a Sunday. So it's not just a case of getting a subscription to just watch Bohemians. You can actually get it for every match, so you can watch every match, because as I said, no game will be on at the same time. So it's really good. It's really interesting to see how it'll develop and how it'll play out, and obviously we'll have the games in RT as well. That's starting next Friday, our first match, Dundalk and St Pat. So it's great to get the league back. It's been a long time coming, Reggie, and hopefully once it does kick off next week, it can go off without any trouble or any hassle.
Al, Declan here, good morning to you.
Hi, Dec.
Not too bad. The best of luck indeed with your new venture, Al. It's taken a long time to come to something like this, hasn't it, in terms of promotion and coverage of the league?
Oh, absolutely, Declan. I'm sure you know as well as me, you've been involved in it a long time. It's probably taken too long, Declan. I think we're way behind the times in terms of revenue streams that we could be thinking outside the box. But that's just the nature of the league and different things. And maybe they've been forced into this. There was a lot of talk about it for a long time, as you mentioned there. And I agree with you. I think it should have been up and running a long time ago. But I suppose we just have to take off where it is, and that's starting next week. And as I say, it's only a starting point. You will have your diehards that will pay the subscription fee because they want to watch their teams anyway. But you're trying to, I suppose, attract a new audience as well, and the casual fan. Whether they'll subscribe to it, I'm not so sure. We'll just have to wait and see. But hopefully we can attract some more people as well, because it's tough for the clubs. Obviously, you see it in England. Clubs as well are struggling, League One, League Two, even Championship level with no fans coming into the ground. So it's hard enough for League of Ireland clubs as it is without no fans, so they need all the help they can get. And I think it's a good initiative, albeit it should have probably been here long ago, but at least it's here now, and hopefully everybody can get behind it.
I think the best promo they could have of it would be showing highlights of the Rovers Dundalk game pre-lockdown.
Well, I think that would be the best advertisement for any league, Declan, because it was so good. But the only problem is you can't market a league on two teams either, and we all know how good they are. And obviously, when they play against each other, the standard is exceptional, as we saw in that game a few weeks ago. But I suppose it's all the other clubs that are trying to get to that standard, and the only way they'll do that is, I suppose, with finances helping them as well. So, as I say, I hope people can get behind it. You'll definitely get your League of Ireland fans buying into it, and it is good value. It's very good value. It'll be covered by RT cameras and an RT commentator as well. It's just hopefully you can maybe, I don't know the numbers behind it in terms of what you will generate and the finance that they're talking about. I've seen speculative figures, really. And if they were to reach those figures, it'd be great. And the money will be divvied out amongst all the clubs, even though the games are not going to be streamed. The first division games, they're going to, if there's a solidarity payment for all the clubs, and whatever money is generated, it's going to be divided equally amongst them all, which I think is a good thing as well, because even though the first division games are not going to be streamed, they need help as well, and it should be a case that everybody's in it together and not just one over the other.
It certainly sounds like good value to me at €55, no doubt about it, and there's been, you know, plenty of calls for this, so now it's up to the fans to get behind it and support it. So hopefully it'll work well. Now, just we don't have a whole lot of time left, Alan, but of course next Friday night seems to sees the return to the League of Ireland. Early games, what ones to watch out for?
Yeah, well, the one that we're covering is Dundalk and St. Pat's. That's the live game on RT. The game before that is actually, I think it's on at 5:30 kickoff. And again, as I mentioned, that'll be streamed. That's Derry City and Sligo Rovers to kick it off. So it'll be interesting to see how the teams adapt. First of all, Reggie, obviously having no fans at the games, because that'll take a bit of getting used to as well. But the only problem for them is the fact that they don't have much time to get used to it, because it's only a 13-game return now. They've obviously played 5 already, and they'll be looking to hit the ground running, because there's still a lot at stake, obviously, for the teams at the top. Shamrock Rovers have had a brilliant start, winning their first 5 games, beating Dundalk in that brilliant game. So they'll be hoping to kick off exactly where they left off. And it'll be interesting to see, because they say there's only 13 games. There's been a couple of bits of clubs doing activity in the window there the last few weeks as well. And obviously Sligo Rovers made a great signing with the lad who was top scorer last year on loan with Derry City Junior. He'll be a good signing, but they need a few more signings like him, because they've had a disaster of a start and they've lost all their so far. So, as I say, it'll take a bit of adjusting, but they don't have time to adjust. It's like what we saw in the restart of the Premier League. You'll have to hit the ground running and get as many results on the board as early as possible, Reggie.
Yeah, but you're looking forward. You think it's going to be a good season, though?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And I'm delighted to see it back. Like, as I say, even though it's been a long time coming and there was a lot of discussion around how we're going to resume and how it's going to come back and the formats, I think the most important thing is that the fact that we're back. If we had to miss out on the season and ride it off and try and come back and start fresh next year in maybe February or March, I think it might have been a bridge too far for some clubs to go that long without any football. So I'm delighted to see us back, and the fact that we will have a league and we will have a winner come the end of the season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There's plenty to look forward to. And as we said, Cawley's call is part of that whole mix. So the very best of luck with it again, Al. I know you're out there doing it, but keep it going, and we'll chat to you again next week.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, lads.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Al.
Alan Cawley there, as I said, host of Cawley's Call. Give it a listen. Some great guests on it, and well worth tuning into, especially with the season upcoming. That's all we've got time for again. Thanks for listening to us on Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to our producer, Paul Maris, and Blaine O'Hara. We'll be back again next Saturday. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.